Chapter 23, The First Russians. The Rus' Come to Constantinople. Let's leave the Forbidden City now and travel back west to the great city of Constantinople. Constantinople was the capital of the Byzantine Empire. Remember, the Byzantine Empire was the eastern half of the old Roman Empire. The Emperor of Byzantium lived in Constantinople, and whoever conquered Constantinople could rule the whole Byzantine Empire. So Muslim warriors tried to conquer Constantinople and failed. Mongol warriors tried to conquer Constantinople and failed. But now Constantinople would face yet another attack from yet another band of warriors, the Rus'. The Rus' lived to the north of Constantinople, in the middle of the continent of Europe. They were tall, blonde, blue-eyed warriors, descendants of Viking explorers. Back when the Vikings were invading France and England, a Viking warrior named Rurik wandered into Central Europe and decided to stay. He and his men settled down to rule over their own little kingdom. The people who already lived there, the Slavs, had to obey them. They called these Viking invaders the Rus', because Rus' sounded like Rurik's name. The Vikings hadn't brought very many women with them, so they married Slavs. The children and grandchildren of the Vikings and Slavs formed their own tribes, built their own cities, and traded with the other countries around them. Soon the tribes of the Rus' were becoming a powerful people. The Rus' were good sailors, like their Viking forefathers, and often sailed south down into the Black Sea to trade with the city of Constantinople. The Rus' had ivory tusks from walruses, honey and beeswax from their own hives, nuts from their trees, and slaves that they had taken captive in their battles with other countries. They exchanged these for silk, glass, and silver in Constantinople, which they called the Great City. But sailing to Constantinople was hard work, even for the grandchildren of Vikings. The rivers leading to the Black Sea were full of rapids, shallow water running over sharp rocks. Sometimes the rivers were so shallow that the Rus' would have to pull their ships out of the water on giant log rollers, roll the ships past the shallows, and then roll them back down into the river. Each trip to Constantinople took weeks or months. You know, the Rus' chieftains said to each other, it would be a lot easier to just conquer Constantinople than to keep sailing down these shallow rivers. So they armed themselves with swords, shields, and spears, launched their ships in one huge war fleet, and set off to attack the great city. Conquering Constantinople wouldn't be easy. The city was built on a little peninsula, so that water surrounded it on three sides. Three thick walls circled the city, and between the walls and the edge of the sea was a moat 60 feet wide, as long as 6 or 7 cars parked end to end. On one side of the city, towers rose up the wall, so that archers could fire out to the sea. On the other side, an enormous chain was stretched across the water between two towers, so that enemy ships couldn't approach the city's shore. But the Rus' were sure that they could conquer Constantinople. After all, they were Vikings. Sailing into battle was what they did best. Meanwhile, the Byzantine army was preparing their secret weapon, sea fire. Sea fire was an oil that kept on burning even when it was spread out on water. When the Rus' ships appeared on the horizon, the defenders of Constantinople threw this oil into the water and set it on fire, and the water itself burned. The wooden ships of the Rus' couldn't break through the sea fire, and so they had to leave Constantinople and sail back home. The Greeks possessed something like the lightning in heaven, they wrote in their histories. They released it and burned us. For this reason, we did not conquer them. One of the strongest of the Rus' princes decided that it would be better to make friends with Constantinople rather than attacking the city again. This prince, named Vladimir, sent the Byzantine emperor a peace present, 6,000 fierce Rus' warriors who would fight for the Byzantine Empire. The Byzantine emperor was delighted with his new army. He made them into his own personal bodyguard. From now on, the Rus' would be the official guardians of the emperor. They were called the Varangian Guard, and soon they were known all over Byzantium for their ferocity and their strength. The emperor was so grateful that he promised the Rus' free food, beds, and baths whenever they came to Constantinople to trade. Eventually, Vladimir himself married a Byzantine princess and was baptized as an Eastern Orthodox Christian. Many of his people followed him and became Eastern Orthodox Christians as well. Soon the country of the Rus' became known by their name. Today we call this kingdom Russia, after the Rus'. Ivan the Great and Ivan the Terrible. In its early days, Russia, the land of the Rus', wasn't one country with one ruler. Instead, warrior princes ruled over several different Rus' tribes. Vladimir was the Prince of Kiev, but other strong Russian cities, like Moscow, often fought with him. Before Russia could be a great country, the Russian cities would have to be joined together. The prince who finally brought the Russian cities together was named Ivan. He was a descendant of Rurik, the Viking invader who first settled in Russia. Because he made Russia into one country, he is remembered as Ivan the Great. But Ivan's grandson wasn't so great. As a matter of fact, he was such a dreadful ruler that he was called Ivan the Terrible. Ivan the Great was the prince of the Russian city of Moscow. When Ivan began to rule in Moscow, his first task was to get Moscow free from the local Mongol kingdom. Remember, after Kublai Khan died, the enormous Mongol empire broke up into smaller kingdoms ruled by warlords called Khans. One of these Mongol kingdoms claimed part of the land of Russia, and the local Mongol Khan demanded that Ivan pay him tribute, money to show that Ivan recognized the Mongols as the true rulers of Russian land. Ivan refused to pay the tribute. The Mongol Khan sent a message saying, "Pay up or I'll attack you." "Go ahead," Ivan retorted. So the Khan assembled his army and marched up to Moscow's walls. Ivan gathered his soldiers and got ready to fight back. And then the Khan turned his men around and marched home. His army wasn't really strong enough to defeat Ivan's Russians. He had been bluffing, hoping that Ivan would pay tribute to avoid a fight. But the truth was that Ivan was more powerful than the Mongols. Now Moscow was free from Mongol rule. Ivan's next job was to conquer the other Russian cities and make them loyal to him. He captured Kiev and the other large Russian cities, took their princes off their thrones, and replaced them with governors who would be loyal to Ivan. He made Moscow the capital city of this new unified Russia. An ancient fortress called the Kremlin lay at the center of Moscow. Ivan the Great built strong walls around the Kremlin and hired a famous architect to build beautiful cathedrals inside it. He ran the country of Russia from his palace inside the Kremlin. Today, Moscow is still the capital of Russia, and the Kremlin is still the center of the Russian government. Ivan the Great was a good Russian king, but his grandson, Ivan the Terrible, became legendary for his wickedness. By the time Ivan the Terrible became king, the people of Moscow liked to call their city the Third Rome, the most important city in the world after Rome itself and after Constantinople. And the ruler of this Third Rome was a powerful man. As a matter of fact, during the reign of Ivan the Terrible's father, the leaders of Moscow announced, "By nature, the king is like any other man, but in power, he is like the highest god." Ivan the Terrible took this power seriously. He called himself Tsar, which means Caesar, to show that he was as powerful as the ancient Roman emperors had been. And at first, he used his power to make Russia stronger. But then Ivan's beloved wife died, and after her death, Ivan began to go mad. His hair and his beard began to fall out. He accused his advisors of treachery and ordered them executed. And he formed a special secret band of police who were supposed to look out for anyone who might be plotting against the Tsar. These secret police rode black horses with black saddles and bridles. Each carried a flag with a picture of a broom and a dog's head on it, to show that they were pledged to sniff out evildoers and sweep them away. But the secret police were the worst evildoers of all. They killed innocent people, took land and houses from anyone they pleased, stole from stores, and burned down the homes of anyone who tried to oppose them. Ivan himself sometimes joined in their crimes. If the secret police told him that a village contained traitors, Ivan would order the entire village executed. And when the Eastern Orthodox Archbishop scolded Ivan for his cruelty, Ivan had his cathedral looted, stripped off the archbishop's clothes, and sent him away in the snow. The noblemen of Russia wanted Ivan's son, now a grown man, to become Tsar in his father's place. But Ivan refused to give up his throne. One day, he and his son began to argue over the future of Russia. Ivan grew so angry that he struck out at his son with his staff, a heavy oak stick tipped with iron. The blow landed on the younger man's head and killed him. When Ivan realized what he had done, he tried to throw himself from the tallest tower in the Kremlin, but his courtiers held him back. For the rest of his life, Ivan the Terrible dressed in black. He paced the halls of his palace at night, weeping and groaning. When he saw a comet in the evening sky, he announced, "My death is near." Shortly afterwards, he collapsed and died. The grandson of Ivan the Great was dead, and Rurik's dynasty was at an end.